Good morning. Welcome in to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples. Today's show is a normal show here that we have on the fourth Thursday of the month. I have to remember what day it is. It's Dr. Timothy Schaefer joining us here in the first half of the program. He is, of course, the director of the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy and also a professor in the Communications Department, associate professor. And we'll also talk with Robin Cole later on in the program from Pawnee Mental Health. Of course, today's Grow Green Match Day, big day for Pawnee Mental Health and a number of nonprofit agencies. Again, Dr. Schaefer is going to kick things off here for us this morning. He joins us via Zoom. Good morning, Dr. Schaefer.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Always a pleasure. We love getting to talk with you. And if you know, we've said this on a number of occasions, you seem to come on the air right after something big happens in the national news, and we had a big week this week up in Minnesota.
We do, and you know, at some point, I would like to come on here and figure out what in the world we might talk about because these significant things aren't happening. But the story of our life these days feels like, you know, these significant events that appropriately are being, you know, talked about and kind of discussed are occurring. So it's nice to be able to speak with you a bit today about some of what, you know, significantly was taking place in Minneapolis that in many ways people were really kind of holding breath, wondering what the verdict would be in the Derek Chauvin trial and its implications. And so I'm happy to speak with you about that today.
Yeah, it is it's a relevant topic here for our discussion because especially with civic discourse, this isn't going to impact, I think, a lot of kind of how we talk about issues of race relations going forward, especially with policing, and there a real need. We've already talked about this for almost a year now here, and even longer before George Floyd, about a need for more dialogue about this issue.
Yeah, I mean, it is one among you know, a long kind of list of incidents that we would now kind of think in this kind of community police relations kind of dynamic, especially and unfortunately, sadly, the loss of life for individuals and the I mean the reality is as we were waiting for the verdict for the Derek Chauvin trial was another report out of Columbus, Ohio, which was not far from where I grew up of a 15-year-old girl. Who was shot and killed by police there because of a confrontation of other things going on. And not to say, you know, all these things are exactly the same by any stretch, right? These are all kind of unique, kind of nuanced situations, scenarios, but it just was just this painful reminder of the routine nature in many ways. And which is why I think as we've, especially since last year, been experiencing you know, especially during 2020, a lot of protests and marches really, you know, for those who are advocating for change or different practices, different kind of banners under which people were kind of marching in response to the killing of George Floyd. But it is truly a moment of reckoning. And I will say even at K-State, we've had the recent past, just not long ago after the opening of our new the Morris Family Multicultural Center, some statements that were written in some public spaces that, you know, appropriately elicited a response from the administration, also trying to create opportunities for people to talk to each other, especially students. But this is a fundamental thing we need to do as people who live in a democratic society. We need to be able to talk with each other about significant issues. And if we can't do that, we're sadly, I think, going to just continue to feel and experience this division, and that's, you know, that's not something that's sustainable in many ways. So there has to be a response here to some of these real significant public problems that we have. And one, I think, appropriate response is to think about where does this idea of dialogue, where does this kind of public discourse come into play, Happy to say more about that in some of the constructive ways, but this is a real issue. And I think for some people who have felt that some of these incidents have felt far away or maybe in cities and places that are not their own, This is, you know, kind of across the board happening in lots of places. And so we have to reckon with that, too, that this is not only out there someplace else. In many ways, it's here.
Now, you tweeted something out here, and I retweeted it on my own personal Twitter page because I thought it's very powerful as a news reporter, because we get a lot of our news from the police department. And the Minneapolis Police Department, it's a screenshot, essentially, of the original press release after the death of George Floyd. And I thought I might just read it the way it was written on May 25th, 2020 here, just to kind of portray how it was initially framed from the Minneapolis Police Department. So it goes like this. It reads, "On Monday evening, shortly after 8 p.m., officers from the Minneapolis Police Department responded to the 3700 block of Chicago Avenue South on a report of a forgery in progress. Officers were advised that the suspect was sitting on top of a blue car and appeared to be under the influence. Two officers arrived and located the suspect, a male believed to be in his 40s, in his car. He was ordered to step from his car. After he got out, he physically resisted officers. Officers were able to get the suspect into handcuffs and noted he appeared to be suffering medical distress. Officers called for an ambulance. He was transported to Hennepin County Medical Center by ambulance, where he died a short time later. At no time were weapons of any type used by anyone involved in this incident. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension has been called in to investigate this incident at the request of the Minneapolis Police Department. No officers were injured in the incident. Body-worn cameras were on and activated during this incident." So that's the initial report. And without the video that has gone viral, that a lot of folks have seen, and it's hard to stomach watching that video, but that would have been it, and that would have been the end of the story, and Derek Chauvin's still on the police force.
Yeah, I mean, the striking familiarity with the way that report, when I saw that the other day, struck me as just being absolutely familiar, right? It reads in the same way that you would read about any sort of scenario that just got filed. I was at Long's Park here in Manhattan last week, and we found some stolen property, and there happened to be a police officer, and so we exchanged it and gave it to him. We ended up finding some more stuff, and I went to the police headquarters to drop that off too. And as I read this, I think back to that moment that, like, the documentation that was just a kind of a petty theft situation, I think. But it would have been documented in very similar fashion, right? Very kind of sterile writing, very kind of matter of fact, right? And we can fill in the parts now. And I mean, significantly, and you noted it, there was a 17-year-old, Darnello Frazier, who was the one who I think, you know, very quickly took out a cell phone, captured that now infamous video, and I think provided another narrative, a visual narrative. And as someone who studies communication, this is the significant impact of who has voice and how does that get presented. If we take this incident from last year in front of that grocery store, it could have been just that report, right? And it might have elicited some relatively local response. But as we know, the ability for video and images to go viral radically changed what occurred. And so it went from simply a situation where someone used a fraudulent dollar bill, a $20 bill, and at the end of an interaction was, you know, deceased. That became kind of this the spark that I think has truly kind of lit this both this protest movement that we saw a lot for this last year, but continuing in places like Congress and elsewhere, real discussions around how do we do things like policing, right? What are the responses and the relationships? But you know, being able to think about the opportunity to have kind of multiple perspectives and stories, that video in a very dramatic way highlights how radically the public perception can change, right? Because if we only had that report, we wouldn't be talking and thinking about it, or having, unfortunately or not, that image seared in our minds that we now know as, you know, a jury of Derek Chauvin's peers found him guilty on three counts, right? Two of murder and one of manslaughter. that what he did, in fact, was not appropriate, was not policing, and it was beyond the bounds of how that should have happened. But we wouldn't have had that otherwise. And so, you know, for us to, when we think about a lot of public issues, and especially for police community relations, is why it's so important for multiple stories and perspectives. And I'm saying not stories in a way that they're fictitious, but the perspectives that allow us to see it in its kind of greater totality, right? This broader perspective that helps us recognize that we all have kind of a stake in this. Because if we think about policing, and I come from a family of police officers, in fact, my father and grandfather, my brother was in the military, and another one's currently serving as a sheriff. And the importance of truly being peace officers and of being able to serve and protect, and why it's so critical for us to be able to have kind of trust in these systems. And I think these incidents, the death of George Floyd and others, have really rocked that. And so I think there has to be some kind of way of moving forward that is constructive, right? It can't just be this confrontational approach or retreating just to kind of protecting oneself, if we really think about policing as part of an essential piece of a civil society.
Yeah, great points. We have a caller here on the line. Charlie has a comment here for us. Good morning, Charlie. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the President of the United States saying that this is an example of systemic racism and all. I mean, it doesn't happen all over the country. And I mean, to the leader of this country to disrespect this country, I don't care. I don't think that's doing anybody any good. In fact, I think it's making things worse. But the thing is that the media does not, you know, yeah, we got a problem with policing. Some of this, you know, like this girl that got killed in Columbus, Ohio, she had a knife and she was coming after somebody with a knife. Well, I heard some black activist say, well, we have knife fights all the time, you know, that's what happens. And now I'm thinking, well, you know, knives kill more people than rifles do, by the way. And by the way, Dr. Schaefer, how many whites have been killed by police as opposed to blacks? Do you know what stats are on that?
I don't have it right in front of me at the moment. I think the raw numbers are different than the percentages, which would be probably the most significant thing to note there, which would be, you know, and I'd be happy to pass this back along after we complete the call today. But I mean, it's a good question. And I believe you said it was Charlie, right? Just to your reference about the scenario in Columbus. Yes, right. The individual had a knife. I think, as I understand, at least from a lot of the reports, is that it was more from a protection standpoint against those who were doing things to her. And that's not to say, you know, that was right or wrong. Clearly, that led to a problem. One of the critiques, and this then also connects to your comment about President Biden, the response in that scenario, as we've seen in lots of situations, the way in which individuals, police officers, react to such scenarios is, if the first instinct is to kind of shoot and often to kill rather than maybe maim, that's a different response than kind of mitigating the situation, kind of de-escalating it in a way that is something that doesn't immediately lead to death. And so some of that systemic language comes to some of that, right? Where does the role of race or that sense of it come into play, even if it's unconscious, right? I mean, this is, I think this is where, and rightfully so, right? I think good questions have to be raised, and it's not uniform, but it's also important and significant for us to recognize that we have, you know, we have some kind of default bias, all of us. And it's not only about race, it's about all sorts of things, and being able to better understand and recognize that. And that might be one of the things that we truly say we need to change some of our practices because of this, not because I have this innate sense of opposition to someone, but just because it's, I mean, and this is why that language of systemic is both unfortunate, but also appropriate, is that it's not wrapped up in how I individually really have strong perceptions of someone, but it's kind of a few steps back, so to speak, in our brains. And it allows us in those instances, which a lot of policing is, right? It's in that moment that we have a kind of a trigger reaction. And the unfortunate thing is, in a lot of situations, that leads to death across the board, not just talking about, say, Black Americans, for example.
All right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We got to take a break. Back with more In Focus after this on News Radio KMAN.